Gregor. And that brings the time to 11 o'clock. You're listening to BBC Radio 3. Time to go live to the Royal Albert Hall for the first of today's proms. It's presented by Sarah Walker.
When the Royal Albert Hall is this packed and over half the audience members still have one or two milk teeth, you know you're in for something special. When our younger listeners heard the news that CBBC's Horrible Histories was coming to the proms, there was no stopping them. The actors from this hit series are here, along with Rattus Rattus, who is going to be hosting the event on stage with Radio 3's Louise Fryer. Well, I think I'm quite lucky to be here in the presenter's box. Quite often on Horrible Histories, unspeakable things get poured out of buckets on top of people's heads. So I just hope Louise has brought her umbrella. Well, the actors will be performing all the top favourite songs from the series, and we'll hear the Aurora Orchestra, who will be playing a wide range of music from all sorts of historical periods, such as Vaughan Williams' Fantasia on Greensleeves, which evokes the awesome figure of Henry VIII. I'm hoping he'll be making an appearance today. So it's going to be an action-packed sequence of pieces, songs and sketches. And I hope I can trust you to join in at home. I'm sure there'll be plenty of audience participation going on here in the hall. Certainly people are dressed for the occasion. And here comes our guide, Louise Fryer.
Hello. I'm Louise. Welcome to the Royal Albert Hall and to this BBC prom. Concerts have been taking place here for over 100 years, since the days of the vile Victorians. And the hall is named after Queen Victoria's husband, Prince Albert, who loved music. And we've got some fantastic music for you this morning, provided by the fine men and women behind me of the Aurora Orchestra. So let's see if you can give them a big cheer. That was pretty good. But let's see if you can give an even bigger cheer for our choirs from the Music Centre and the Kids' Company Choir. And now, an even more ginormous, humongous cheer for the man whose job it is to keep them all under control. Let's welcome our conductor, Nick Collin. Now, normally, ever since Victorian times, conductors have become more and more important, and normally, Nick would be top dog. But as this is a Horrible Histories prom, our top dog today is a rat. So let's hear it for Rattus Rattus! Let's try that again. Let's hear it for Rattus Rattus!
Sorry about that, Louise. I was just hoovering up a few cockroaches.
Well, Rattus, given the depths of your historical knowledge, and I mean depths, I've been told it's okay to leave you in charge of proceedings. I understand you're very reliable.
Oh, yes, Louise. I know exactly what's going on. Hello, Wembley!
It's the Royal Albert Hall.
I knew that. Look, if anything else goes wrong today, don't blame me, all right? Blame the idiot who thought it would be a good idea to put a sewer rat in charge of a prom that's being broadcast
live on Radio 3.
Right, well, I think I shouldn't be too far away, but I am going to let you host the prom for now. You see, today is a very special event. We're going to be putting the royal into the Royal Albert Hall, joined by kings and queens stretching back across the centuries. And before I go, Rattus, do you mind if I introduce the first item?
Oh, be my guest, Louise, yeah? I've just spotted another cockroach. Yummy.
Well, we're going to start, while he's busy munching away, with music inspired by a prophet called Zoroaster, who lived in Persia around 2,500 years ago. He came up with the idea of Superman. He lived on a mountaintop and the music depicts a glorious sunrise. You might like to think of it as the dawn of time. That's where we begin this horrible history's prom, before moving swiftly on to a theme tune I think you'll recognise.
Welcome to HHTV News. The headlines today. Thousands gather at the Royal Albert Hall for a special Horrible Histories prom. Henry VIII and Charles II arrive for this unusual royal variety performance in which a variety of royals will perform. King Ethelred the Unready totally forgets what day the concert's on. Yes, our lead story is the special concert in which Horrible History songs and classical music are performed by one awesome orchestra, two classy choirs, and a host of horrible historical characters. The Aurora Orchestra and their conductor, Nick Collin, are ready to guide us through the best bits of the history of music. But first, the origins of the orchestra involve a tuneful tale full of twists and turns. So here with a summary is Bob Hale with the orchestra report. Bob.
Thank you, Sam. Oh, no. Come on now. Enough. Thank you, Sam. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Well, behind me, I am reliably informed, is an orchestra. Yep, there they are, a big group of people, all playing music together. But where did they come from? Well, some came from as far away as Guildford. Hello, Simon. Yep. But the concept of an orchestra comes from even further away, if you can believe that. In fact, it existed as far back as ancient Greece, home, unsurprisingly, of the ancient Greeks, who come up not only with the word orchestra, but also with the first musical scales and some instruments to play them on, things like the panpipes. and percussion. And something called a lyre. Though it looks pretty trustworthy to me. And then, just when we have something approaching an orchestra, along come the Dark Ages, the church band's instruments, and that's the end of that. But not for long. In the medieval era, groups make a comeback, this time with ridiculously named instruments, such as the serpent, the racket, the crumb horn, and the sackbut. You just blew down a sackbut. And if you play them all together, they sound like this. Absolutely awful, which is probably why modern orchestras don't use them anymore. But they do use this, thank you very much, written music, which, thanks to the invention of the printing press during the Renaissance, can now be shared around. There you go. Meaning we can all now get down to the same banging tunes. Oh, and as dance music's popularity grows, so does the orchestra, as they add a trumpet. Oh, there it is! And a tambourine! Oh, and a big bag of woodwind! Sorry, part of that was me. Shouldn't have had the bolognese. In fact, by the time we enter the so-called Baroque period, some orchestras have as many as 30 people in, now including drums. Oh, don't do that. Do you have any idea how old I am? Then, as the Baroque period merges into the classical one, having your own personal composer becomes the in thing. All the best composers are hired by the kings and queens of Europe, meaning if you don't want to work for the royals, you're basically stuck between Baroque and a hard place. Little joke there, nice one, Bobsy. Oh, and talking of little, along comes Mozart, who starts writing music at just 2 years old, proving he's a complete genius and a horrible show-off. Then he grows up, writes 1,000 tunes, discovers the clarinet, and then dies. Killed by rival composer Salieri in a jealous rage. Or possibly not, no one really knows. But we do know that while Mozart made a big noise in the music world, it wasn't as big a noise as Beethoven, who, partly because he's deaf, makes the orchestra bigger and louder than ever before, which means as we enter the Romantic period, some orchestras have swollen to a whopping 100 pieces, which is so big and unwieldy, no offence, guys, that they need someone to keep them all in time. So conductors appear, hello, just to keep them all in time together, and in no time at all becomes bigger and more famous than the orchestra themselves. All right, mate, don't build your part. And with everything getting bigger, including somebody's ego, well, then the venues have to get bigger too, so it's goodbye to royal palaces and hello to enormous new concert halls such as... Nope, can't think of an example. And in these huge halls, modern music goes absolutely crazy. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I would like you to go crazy. As for my big finale, I present my favourite modern musical masterpiece, played with aplomb for you and you only by the one, the only, time-straddling, foot-thumping, heart-pumping, hit-making orchestra! Take it away, boys!
Bob. I can't hear anything.
Of course you can. This is John Cage's classic 4 minutes and 33 seconds. 4.5 minutes of absolute silence.
And you enjoy that?
Oh, come on. There's nothing not to like. Wait, this is the best bit. Oh, so good. Thank you, boys. Thank you for listening. And back to you, Sam.
Right. So, it seems that the orchestra as we know it began life in medieval times, which is around the same time as Bob.
I heard that.
And you were meant to. Coming up next in HHTV News, we go over to the medieval era for... Oh, no, wait. I have some breaking news. It seems I'm being told I'm not allowed to start yet because some Georgian kings want to be allowed to sing first. And apparently... Yes, yes. Apparently, we have to let them as their blood is blue. So I will hand you over now, live, to Kings George, 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 and George for the story of the four Georges.
I took the throne of England just 'cause I was Protestant, a German prince whose English thank King George number one.
I like to argue, now that's clear, especially with my father here. Before I died of diarrhea, I fought with my son.
I broke records with my 60-year reign,
and I broke the scales with my giant frame.
Born to rule over you, King George
IV,
three,
four,
and two. You had to do what we told you to, just because our blood was blue.
I was the hunk, girls adored me, ladies all swooned before me. They would do anything for me, or I'd have their husbands killed.
Had a war with Prince Charles Bonny.
Everyone said that I was funny.
I spent everyone's money.
Our subjects were not thrilled.
I was the sad one.
And I was the bad one.
I was the mad one.
And I was the fat one.
We were born to rule over you, Georges.
One,
three,
four,
and two.
England's kings,
though we were German too.
Him,
then him,
then me,
then you.
We were
born to rule. Now, our song is through.
Yeah.
Well, this is nice. Welcome to the Royal George II Hall. Is that? Yes, I just renamed it. I can do that sort of thing because I am the king. You're a scruffy lot, aren't you? Didn't you know you were going to meet a king? I mean, none of you are even wearing wigs apart from this guy. Is that? Not a wig. Are you sure? Oh, okay. I don't believe you. Bit weird. Anyway, nice to meet you. What do you do?
I play the violin.
Violin's lovely. And what do you do? Violin, that's lovely. And what do you do? Violin, lovely. And what do you do? Violin, lovely. And oh, this is going to take too long. I can see that already. What's so special about you up there then?
Well, I'm the conductor.
Oh, the conductor. So you wave the little stick around, do you?
Yeah.
Does he get paid for this? Well, it can't be that hard. Come on. Give us a go. I think it's broken. What's first then? Medieval music. All right, give us a blast. Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. Stop it, stop it. What on earth is that instrument?
That's a sackbut.
A sackbut? Well, you can say that again. Why don't you play some medieval themed music, but on your nice Georgian instruments?
Well, that's not actually what we rehearsed at all.
Yeah, it's not what we rehearsed at all. Hands up, who's king? Didn't think so. Now do as I tell you, or I'll have my royal executioner take that little stick and shove it up your sack butt. Get on with it.
Has he gone yet? Has he? Are you sure? All right then, go on, sling your hook, Georgie. I'm in charge here. Oh, now I'm getting funny looks from him. Well, me and Mr. Nick Collin, the conductor, yes. Now, I should probably point out to listeners who've just tuned in on radio that I am, in fact, a rare Himalayan leopard. No, all right, I'm not. I'm just a common rat. So, Mr. Collin, we should play something more tuneful that represents the Middle Ages. What do you reckon?
Well, there was a lot of death in the Middle Ages, so how about the Dance Macabre?
Oh, yes, the Middle Ages. Floods, wars, plagues.
My favourite.
Lots of death. Yeah, good idea. The Aurora Orchestra will now play the Dance Macabre by Sanson, which is all about death and features skeletons brought to life by a fiddler.
Thank you.
right.
Come on, bring them out. Bring out your plague victims. They're no good to you now. Too smelly as a draft excluder and too big for a paperweight. Come on, get them out. Oh, I see that you've got a dead end for me. Yeah, that one moved. I don't think it's quite gone, love. It don't look well, though, does it?
Oh.
Don't worry, I'll pop back tomorrow.
That's a nasty-looking plague sore you got there. Look at this one. Don't you worry, though, I've got just the thing. You strap this chicken's bottom to it. What do you mean you don't want to? Everyone knows chicken bottoms heal up plague sores. That's just scientific fact.
Of course, if you prefer, we could always burst them with a red hot poker.
Chicken's bottom don't sound so bad now, does it?
Of course, we won't be catching this plague, will we, my dear?
Oh, no chance of that, my love. We have taken precautions, haven't we? We've been sitting knee-deep in sewage all day, and we still smell better than you.
Oh, fresh as a poo-covered daisy, my sweet. Because everyone knows that the plague-filled air hates poo-filled air.
Well, that's just scientific fact.
And believe me, you really want to avoid this plague stuff, if you possibly can. It is horrible business. It starts with a little flea that jumps upon a rat.
It bites the rat and gives it germs, and for the rat, that's that.
Then the flea, it looks for somewhere else to find its food.
It hops on you and me and starts to suck our blood. First, you feel a little poorly, and then you start to swell. Then you start to spit some blood, and then you really smell. Then you know it's time to ring your funeral bell. Along comes Mr. Death and swishes you to hell.
There's lots of cures to help you if you've got the cash. Kill the village cats and dogs and burn them all to ash.
Sit down in a sewer so the smell drives plague away. Place chicken bottoms on your spots, then you'll be okay. First, you feel a little poorly, and then you start to swell. Then you start to spit some blood, and then you really smell. Then you know it's time to ring your funeral bell. Along comes Mr. Death and swishes you to hell. Plague kills little children even more than mums or dads. A priest said it's because the wicked kids have acted bad.
Half the children on the earth are simply blown away. So for Mr. Death it will be very busy days.
First you feel a little poorly, and then you start to swell. Then you start to spit some blood, and then you really smell. Then you know it's time to ring your funeral bell. Along comes Mr. Death and swishes you to hell.
First you
feel a little poorly, and then you start to swell. Then you start to spit some blood, and then you really smell. Then you know it's time to ring your funeral bell. Along comes Mr. Death and swishes you to hell. Along comes Mr. Death.
Of course, this plague business wasn't all bad news.
Oh, well, that's true. I mean, granted, a lot of us peasants died.
But that meant there were fewer of us. So those of us left were in greater demand, could negotiate a better deal.
It's not like our deal could have got much worse. In the Middle Ages feudal system, we were right at the bottom of the pile.
I'll explain, shall I, dear? You see, I am a peasant. I spend my days working a tiny lot of land. In fact, my lot is so small it should be called a little.
Oh.
I can't grow much on it, and part of what I do grow I have to give to my master, who thankfully isn't here, because between you and me, he's a bit of an idiot. Hello, boss.
I am a yeoman. I have too much land to farm myself, so I have peasants who do it for me. I mean, obviously, they keep enough food to eat, but I get the lion's share. That's because I'm king of this jungle, big time.
I thought you had to give most of your share to your master, but...
You see, this is exactly why we have the no speaking rule, Jeff. Yeah? Yeah, technically speaking, I do have to give most of it to my master, who, thankfully speaking, isn't here, because between you and me, he's a bit of an idiot. Oh, hello, boss.
I am a knight.
Mate,
you've got your lid down.
Ha,
lies are in the way. Thank you. I am a knight. I own a huge chunk of land, but I'm far too busy being brave and handsome to manage it all, so I give some to my yeoman here, who, you know, uses it to rear the horses and grow the food I need to fight. Now, I fight for the local baron, even though, between you and me, I think he's a bit of an idiot. Oh, all right, boss.
Hello, I'm a baron. I keep the entire kingdom strong and secure by providing an army. But an army needs knights, so I give some of my land to him so that he'll fight for me. I get my land directly from the king himself, and I would defend him unto my death. Although between you and me, I've heard he's a mad, vicious, murdering hunchback who doesn't belong on the throne. What? Oh, there's no one there.
Thank goodness for that.
Thank goodness for what?
Oh, it's the king!
Fine, it's only me. Honestly, some people just seem to have the wrong idea about me. They all seem to think I'm this vicious, murdering hunchback. Well, it's about time I set them straight. I was sure that you'd love me. To that hope I did cling, 'cause I'm Richard III, and everybody loves a king, don't they? Thought I did a good job, why do you disagree? There's a lot of people spreading nasty rumors about me. Every word is a lie, so I'm singing this song, 'cause the history books have been telling it wrong. Never had a limp, always walked my full height. Never had a hump and my arm was all right. Never took the crown with illegal power. Never killed my nephews, the princes in the tower. Tudor propaganda, it's all absurd. Time to tell the truth about King Richard III. Okay? My brother, Edward, died. His kids too young to rule. So, I took the throne. Excuse me. Why not? I'm nobody's fool. Hi, nice to meet you.
Thomas More wrote a history, said I murdered Edward's boys. Shakespeare says their death was an evil ploy. Hi. But I see those two are historical vandals. They've ruined my image. I mean, what a scandal! Never bumped off those harmless young heirs. Never buried them under the Tower of London stairs. Never poisoned my wife. Bumped off my daddy. This is me, sweet Richard. Do I look like a baddie, love? Never was two-faced, sure you'll agree. I was misunderstood. King Richard III. Can you imagine it? I'm the last Plantagenet, beaten by Henry in the Wars of the Roses. The Tudor dynasty didn't care that much for me. Now I'm painted as a baddie, that's why one supposes. Never forget when you give up my crimes. Never drowned my brother in a massive vat of wine. Never sent a horse, my kingdom for a horse. Who made that up? Why, William Shakespeare, of course. Now my tale is told, you won't hear a bad word about a special ruler, King Richard III. I'm a nice guy.
Poor old Richard III. Everyone thinks he was an awful king thanks to William Shakespeare, who portrayed him like that in his famous play, Richard III. I went to see the play in the West End, but sadly it had to be stopped. Someone spotted a rat in the stalls. Can't imagine who. Shakespeare's plays inspired loads of classical music. The most famous one is probably Prokofiev's ballet, Romeo and Juliet. And this next piece is from the scene where Romeo takes on Tybalt, the killer of his best friend. His best friend in a fight to the death. We'll be right back. brilliant. Well, still another 20 minutes to the interval, so if you need the toilet, you're just going to have to hold it in. Hmm? I'm looking at you. Of course, it's not such a problem if you were a rat. Yeah, you can go whenever you like. Ah, there's something to keep the cleaners busy. And another first for Radio 3 listeners.
Right, let's get this concert back on track.
With another piece that has Tudor origins. In fact, some people will tell you Henry VIII composed it.
Yeah.
It's the famous tune, Greensleeves. Although this is an orchestral version scored in 1934. Write that down. By the English composer, Ralph Vaughan Williams.
I keep hearing all this rubbish about me, Henry VIII, composing Greensleeves. I didn't. I mean, honestly, that style of music didn't even come into the country until after I was dead. The silly idiots said I composed it for my fourth wife, Anne Boleyn. And, hang on a minute. Was she my fourth wife or my second wife? Well, which wife was she? What was it? What? I still can't hear you. I'll have to take your word for it. Well, I may not have composed Greensleeves, but I was an accomplished musician. Yes. I even played the bagpipes. I brought some along for you today to play. Would you like to hear that? Well, they're up my jumper. Hang on a second. Oh, no. I appear to have left them in the dressing room. That's just my stomach. My sixth wife was always honored me to be healthier. Anne was her name. No, hang on a minute. That wasn't it. No, hang on. That was my fourth. It's no good. We're going to have to do the song, aren't we? I said we're going to have to do the song, aren't we? Okay. Choir! You all remember the actions, don't you?
Yes.
You better do. Right, take it away, ladies. Here we go. Oh, here we go. Divorced, beheaded, and died. Divorced, beheaded, survived. I'm Henry VIII, I had six sorry wives. Some might say I ruined their lives. Here we go. Catherine of Aragon was one. She failed to give me a son. I had to ask her for a divorce. That broke her poor heart, of course. Young Anne Boleyn, she was two. Had her daughter the best she could do. I said she flirted with some other man, and off with the chop went dear Anne. Lovely Jane Seymour was three, the love of a lifetime for me. She gave me a son, little Prince Ed. Then poor old Jane went and dropped dead. Oh dear. Divorced, beheaded and died. Divorced, beheaded, survive! I'm Henry VIII, I have six sorry wives. Some might say I ruined their lives. Okay, here we go. Anne of Cleves came at four. I fell for the portrait I saw. Then laid eyes on her face and cried, she's a horse. I must have another divorce. Catherine Howard was five. A child of 19, so alive. She flirted with others, no way to behave. The axe sent young Cath to her grave. Catherine Parr, she was last. By then all my best days were past. I lay on my deathbed, age just 55. Lucky Catherine the last stayed alive. I mean, how unfair. Divorced, beheaded, and died. Divorced, beheaded, survived. I'm Henry VIII, I had six sorry wives. Two could say I ruined their lives. How about that then? I remember it now. It's all flooding back. Don't you just hate it when you get married six times and you cannot for the life of you remember how many wives you had executed? Happens to everybody. I executed quite a lot of people in my reign. A lot. Does anybody know how many? Go on, throw some figures at me. 20,000? No, no, no. Keep coming, I can't hear you. 200? You say 200? No, I chopped many more than that. 200? 200 was just the amount of horses I had in my stables. You can stop shouting now. Until I give you the cue, okay? 200 was just the amount of horses I had in my stable. Well, it was 201 until yesterday. I sat on one. Poor old Dobbin. Right, here comes the shouty bit, gang. So, 200. Now, is it higher or lower than 200, do you think?
Higher.
2 million? Was it 2 million? No, 2 million is just roughly the amount I spent on clothes in a year. I needed a lot of material for some reason, I don't know why. Right, is it higher or lower than 2 million, do you think? Lower, I think. No, we'll go for that. 72,000 is the number of people I had executed in the 1500s. That's a lot, isn't it? A lot. But it does mean that I haven't had anybody executed for 500 years. So I think we should start again now, don't you? Executioners! Right, let's start over here, shall we? Tell me, Nicholas, how many violins do you have?
26 violins.
26 violins? You don't need that many. Let's start with one of those. Off you go. But how about a piece of music as we march them to the scaffold?
Oh, well, March to the Scaffold by Berlioz.
That sounds great. March to the Scaffold by Berlioz. Excellent. Right. I'm off to attend something much more important. My lunch. See you later.
Right. Let's choose some victims then, right?
I think this one.
Yeah, this
one. Yeah, looks like it's been bad. Sorry, not much of a head though, you won't miss it. I'll have to poke its eyes out, won't look any good on a spike with no eyes.
Thank you.
Come along, you! Come on!
Hang on, hold your horses, chaps. It doesn't say anything in here about beheadings. Bit of a downer. This is supposed to be family entertainment. I mean, you don't want to see people being beheaded, do you, children? Right, well, you're weird, some of you. It happened to my dad, and I don't think he liked it very much. No, no, won't do it all. Come on, let's cheer things up. If you've been blindfolded by those nasty men, free yourselves and let's party.
Here! No, 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 no! You can't do that! Who do you think you are?
I'll tell you who I am. My name is Charles II. I love the people, and the people love me so much that they restored the English monarchy. I'm a Scottish, French, Italian, a little bit Dane, but 100% party animal. Champagne, spaniels I adore, named after me too. Like me, they were fun with a natty hairdo. Is today my birthday? I can't recall. Let's have a party anyway, because I love a mass ball. I'm the king. Brought back partying. King Charles, my daddy, lost his throne and kings were banned. They chopped off his head, then Ollie Cromwell ruled the land. Old Ollie wasn't jolly, he was glum and he was proud. Could be miserable and sin. Sinning's not allowed. When Ollie died, the people said, Charlie, be hearty. Get rid of his dumb laws, come back, we'd rather party. This action's what they call the monarchy restoration, which naturally was followed by a huge celebration. Okay. All say I'm the king who brought back partying. Great London Fire was a whopper, and my reign London City came a cropper. So this king did what was right and proper. Fought the fire, proved I'm more than a bopper. I'm a fire stopper. Mary Catherine Brackenshaw, she was a love so true. There would never be another, well, maybe one or two. Lucy Walter, Nell Gwynn, Muldavis, Barbara Villiers. You think that's bad, but her name's not Azilias. As king, I must admit, I broke the wedding rules. But who cares when I brought back the crown jewels? I reinstated Christmas, make-up sports and even plays. I was the merry monarch, they were good old days. That's me! I was the king, loved by everyone. My song is done. Party, anyone?
All hail the king of bling! Hey, Charlie, you know, we've got a lot in common, you and I.
I sincerely doubt it.
Oh, come on. I'm a party animal too. Well, I'm an animal, and I love to party!
And that's where the similarity ends. You see, I am a well-groomed king, and you are a a stinky rodent.
Keep those compliments coming.
With what appears to be a bit of a skin condition.
Yes, I confess, I can get a bit itchy.
Possibly a dose of scrofula, a nasty disease from Stuart times which can cause skin problems. Are you taking anything for it?
Yes. Regular baths. In the toilet.
Ugh. Well, luckily, I have the royal touch. As king, it is my divine right to be able to cure certain diseases. And the good news is, I believe I can cure scrofula with a simple touch of my finger.
Ooh, nice one.
The bad news is, I wouldn't touch you with a barge pole. A spade, maybe.
Well, that's not very nice. But listen, you want to stick around, because the next piece is Georgian party music composed by Handel. Yeah, it's called the Royal Fireworks Music. And you won't believe what happened when it was performed in 1749. There was a huge party, and fireworks set fire to an enormous wood building.
A huge party, and I missed it. Can we reenact it here? Only possibly without the burning building. A lot of children here.
Yeah, that's true. Let's do that very thing. Take it away, Mr. Colin.
Ooh.
Brutus. How have you been getting on? I hope you've been keeping an eye on health and safety with all these pyrotechnics.
Oh, yes, Louise. It's all going terribly well. Well, yes, I've singed my tail, but the Royal Albert Hall is still in one piece.
Well, that's a relief. That was Handel's music for the Royal Fireworks, written for King George II. And as Rattus mentioned, the original fireworks didn't quite go to plan. They were supposed to end with a huge sun emblazoned with the Latin words Vivat Rex, long live the king. And the sun was designed to burn for 5 hours. But the building it was attached to caught light, burnt down. They had to call the fire brigade.
That's not funny, is it? No. Well, nothing's burned down here yet. Of course, in the event of an emergency, I'll be going down the rat emergency exit, otherwise known as the sewer.
Which brings us rather neatly, or rather messily, to the interval. But don't go too far away, because there's a whole cast of crazy, colourful musical characters that Rattus and I would like you to meet in part two. So join us back here 20 minutes after the interval. And that brings us to the end of part one of today's Free Family Proms, starring the Horrible Histories team, along with their regular host, the friendly rodent, Rattus Rattus, and of course our very own Louise Fryer. But here on Radio 3, it's time now for us to join the historian, Professor Justin Champion, in conversation with the creative team behind Horrible Histories.
Hello. I hope you've all enjoyed the first part of our prom this morning. It may be your first encounter with Horrible Histories, or if you're a parent or a grandparent, you're quite likely to be familiar with Stupid Deaths or HHTV News. I'm joined now by just a few of the creative team behind Horrible Histories. Terry Deary, the author of the original books, Richie Webb, the composer of all of the songs, and Dave Cohen, sketchwriter and lyricist of such classics like the Charles II rap, and the executive producer, Caroline Norris. Terry, when I was a small boy in the 1960s, imaginative fun historical writing was scarce. Did you think there would be much of a market for your books?
When I first started writing them, the market was for joke books, and somebody asked me to write a history joke book. I didn't really imagine that there'd be a market for funny historical books with serious facts in them. But it seems we invented a new genre. So no, we didn't anticipate it because nobody had ever done it before.
Now, for those of you who haven't seen the books, not only are they full of history, but they're appealing to children. They're full of fun cartoons, jokes, and probably more importantly, facts about blood, guts and gore. Caroline, how difficult was it to capture the essence of the books for TV?
When they came to me and asked if I'd make the books into a TV show, I had thought I didn't really want to make any more children's programmes at the time. And then I looked at the books and thought, I don't want anyone else to make this because I can see exactly what this could be. And what Terry's books give us is a fantastic attitude, and he has a real, you have a real, how would I describe it?
Anti-authority, anti-establishment, anti-anything that moves on two legs.
That's right. Yeah. But Terry's brilliant at picking out the moments in history that appeal to children.
I like Horrible Histories because, let's say you're doing history projects, you can actually laugh and learn history at the same time, and it tells you some facts which your teachers wouldn't tell you. So you can actually learn two types of history, the silly one and the, well, serious one.
I'm interested in human nature, how people react under traumatic situations, and I pick those bits. And then the facts are checked by so-called experts, who can be pretty stroppy people, believe me. I say outrageous things and they say, you can't say that, so I say it even more.
And I think that's exactly the experience that we had making the show.
This series, the books and the TV programmes, really appeal to children because it's funny. Mm. But how hard is it to compress the sort of authenticity of the historical account with humour?
There's different ways of doing it. There are a few different sorts of sketches that we do. We do some sketches which take one historical fact and we make a joke out of that, and we make a sketch from that one fact. In other places, we want to take quite a lot of information and get that across. I mean, one of the things I remember thinking when we looked at the books was Terry has timelines and he has overviews and he has lots of really rich information in the books. And how do we do that in the TV show? which is where partly where some of the songs came from, and also partly where the Bob reports came from. We've just heard a Bob report in the prom, which are compressing an enormous amount of information down into 2 minutes, and that's the joke. The joke is that you do the whole history of the Roman Empire in 2 minutes. We sort of, when we were developing the series, we thought we'd have to make it funny and then explain the facts afterwards, but it turned out that you could do both at the same time because the brilliant writing team that we brought together allowed us to do that. So,
Dave, you're really at the hard end of this. You're one of the song lyricists. When Caroline commissioned you to be one of the writers on the TV show, did you know much about history, horrible or otherwise?
I'd seen horrible histories books around friends who had kids who were older than my kids. I just immediately got a sense of, oh, this is, yeah, yes, of course. Of course this is a sketch show on telly. It couldn't be anything else, you know. Well, it could be very successful books. But on top of that, I could see straight away, I thought, yeah, I'm going to enjoy this.
You learned quite a lot. I think Horrible Histories has been a great thing for me to learn history. And I'm only six.
Richie, we've got soft rock Vikings, rapping sovereigns, yes. High score sing-along Spartans. One of the brilliant aspects of the songs is really the marrying of musical style with the historical content. But where on earth do you start?
Well, it's interesting, actually, because that's something that's evolved over the three series, I think. I mean, when we were doing the first series, there's only a couple of songs, I think, that are sort of specifically have a style that married with them. But as we were doing subsequent series, that sort of became the default setting. And it just happens, doesn't it? I mean, with the Vikings, what else could Vikings be other than soft 80s prog rockers? The answer is, well, there isn't anything.
Was the summer of 793 when we sailed across the great North Sea.
Comets crossed the skies that night. Must have known something wasn't right.
We arrived upon your English shore and you offered friendship, but we wanted more. Yes, so much more. We're tearing up this place tonight.
Literally.
We're gonna set this sleepy town alight.
Literally.
We'll kill and steal and burn and drink, 'cause us Viking don't care what you think. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
And with Charles II as the party animal, what else could he be but a hard-living gangster rapper? I mean, it's all fairly obvious, really.
These songs are very, very popular. They've got a life of their own now on things like YouTube. Yeah. And they remind me of the way ballads worked before the 20th century. Verse and song, you know, really the main way the little people, the lower people, encounter the past. And they learn those ballads in childhood. So they learn about the Norman Conquest, Robin Hood, the Crusades. They would have been sung at pubs, parties. Are these songs the same sort of thing? Are they just entertainment, or are you after doing something else?
Oh, they're very much where I came from. I was a folk singer in the 60s when you were a little boy. I'm a bit older than you. And I used to sing music hall ballads, but they also had historical facts in them. So one of my favourites, for example, was "They're Moving Father's Grave to Build a Sewer," which was a comic song, but it told us about a serious social problem of moving people's graveyards in order to build sewers for the rich people. So there was real social meaning behind it. And that's what I took into my stage show, my one-man show, and then into the CDs, which we made, and we incorporated songs into it. And that naturally went over into the television as well. So for me, yes, it comes from the Victorian music hall.
So that's in one sense, this genre has a long, long, long tradition going back into the 19th and perhaps
No, it goes back into the jongleurs of the Normans, the troubadours of the Middle Ages, probably the Viking saga singers and so on. Homer even. I don't know. It's forever. Mm. Everybody loves a good song which tells a story.
Aristophanes, I think, described satire as partly he described it as in song form, so obviously it goes back 2,500 years. Any song that's a success has usually got one big hook to it, whatever that hook might be. And really, in a sense, a comic song is no different, and the hook is usually just a very good gag, or it might just be four Georges, four blokes in a song. It's got to be a boy band. And that, once you establish your hook, then the other things sort of follow from that.
I mean, what I find wonderful about this stuff is I'm a historian of the Restoration. You know, if we write, we have footnotes. It's pretty dull reading at times. But that song, the Charles II rap, really, to me, captures the whole libertine sort of culture of the court of the Merry Monarch. And what I find compelling is how you've managed to sum up just a few epic moments in that history in a couple of lines. And I want to quote a bit. I can't do it in rhythm, but maybe. King Charles, my daddy, lost his throne. Kings were banned. They chopped off his head when Ollie Cromwell ruled the land. Old Ollie wasn't jolly. Lovely line. He was glum and he was proud and as miserable as sin, but sinning's not allowed. How hard is it to do that?
People say to me sometimes, oh, you write songs, and I actually think what I do is I write rhyming gags, really. And so I'm always just looking for stupid rhymes. And it's always nice to get an internal rhyme as well, like old Ollie wasn't jolly. You know, that's, it's always quite satisfying. So you kind of just, it's a difficult process to explain because you're kind of looking for sort of four or five different things at the same time.
My name is Charles II. I love the people and the people love me so much that they restored the English monarchy. I'm part Scottish, French, Italian, a little bit Dane, but 100% party animal. Champagne! Spaniels I adored, named after me too. Like me, they were fun with a natty hairdo. Is today my birthday? I can't recall. Let's have a party anyway because I love a mouthful.
All hail the King of Britain. Let's sing, bells ring, ding ding.
I'm the king who brought back partying. King Charles, my daddy, lost his throne and kings were banned. They chopped off his head, then Ollie Cromwell ruled the land. Old Ollie wasn't jolly, he was glum and he was proud. Would be miserable as sin, only sinning's not allowed. When Ollie died, the people said, Charlie, me hearty, get rid of his dull laws, come back, we'd rather party. This action's what they called the monarchy restoration, which naturally was followed by a huge celebration.
The king of England,
say,
no sin to sin.
Okay. All say I'm the king who brought back partying.
The most interesting thing for me with that song was that here's this guy who, among other things, had nine mistresses. And it was the first time I'd thought, this is an area now. How do you deal with this sort of information in a show that's aimed at sort of eight-year-olds? And so that was actually the hardest thing, was trying to make the story about the mistresses work in a way that could be told as information to eight-year-olds, but anyone who was older would kind of get what that was about. And that was really the hardest thing with that song.
I mean, I guess that's a broad approach of the books as well, though. You're communicating in quite a grown-up way with young children, young minds.
That's one of the things that, for me, Terry's approach is really important, because he takes children seriously and he says, you can deal with this, you can think about this for yourself, here's some information that grown-ups might not have thought to tell you or might not have thought to learn. And he really treats children like they've got brains, and that's certainly an approach that we found really useful, that we were able to treat them like they could take it and like they could join in a debate and that they could... One of the things I really remember is Terry's books always say, well, that might be true, but it might not. Why don't you go and think about it for yourself? Why don't you go and make your own mind up? Why don't you go and talk to somebody about this? And that's what we wanted. We wanted children to take the information from the TV show and go and do their own research or go and make up their own minds. And that, for me, was really key. It's one of the key things about the attitudes of the books.
You sat down on the sofa, you're listening to music and learning songs at the same time. You're also having a laugh. I mean, you wouldn't have a laugh in a... lesson your teacher's telling you,
because usually you're sat down in the classroom listening to your teacher telling you things, and it can be made quite boring very easily. However, with all the horrible histories TV, one of my history teachers did an experiment and they showed us a clip of horrible histories, and suddenly we learned so much more than in a usual history session, and all my classmates were very alert for the rest of the lesson, and we were full of information.
Children's literature had a lot to answer for, because they always treated children like children. And then along came this wonderful man called Roald Dahl, who brought out these books, which were black comedy. Mm. And people said, you can't do Charlie and the Chocolate Factory with people drowning in a puddle of chocolate. That's disgusting. And they refused to publish him, and he took about 7 or 8 goes before he was published. But once Dahl had broken down that barrier, I was able to follow up with the factual.
You've had a tremendous response from children to the series, but what is it that they really like best?
I always said I wanted to make a show that people would say was too good for children, because I thought that's what children deserved, and that's what we tried to do.
I think children love accumulating facts. Mm. And when you put those facts into a song, which they can learn and then regurgitate endlessly to their parents, as the parents complain to me, then the kids feel great about it.
I know a lot of people love the songs.
I mean, every time I think, oh, it's because of this, I go, oh, no, and also that and that and that. And I mean, it genuinely is the most coherent team I've ever worked with, and if one element dropped out, it wouldn't be nearly as good.
Yeah, I think you could take those songs and give them to the wrong people to perform, mm-hmm. and they would die, despite, you know, the wonderful efforts of Richie and Dave. They are also very well performed. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Dave, I mean, it seems perhaps right at the nub of this, it's about rhythm and verse and words married to music. So are there any particular historical rhymes that you've written that you're especially proud of?
Can you imagine it? I was the last Plantagenet of Richard III. I took the rest of the day off after that, I must say. I was a bit chuffed with that one. Yeah.
Richie, do you have any particular favourites?
Well, I'm a big fan of the Monarch song, which unfortunately, due to logistical nightmare that it would be, featuring every monarch from William I right through to the Queen Elizabeth II, that song was a big challenge because that was about 11 pages long. And there's some great rhymes in that. And just the chorus building and the way that it's children can use it to learn the order of every monarch, and which they are doing. I mean, children that I know stop me in the street to sing it to me, and I think that's one I think is particularly good.
Can you give us a couple of rhyming couplets?
Well, I can try. Can everybody remember that? William, Henry, Stephen, Edward, Richard, John.
Henry, Stephen, Henry, Richard, John. Edward, Rich the...
No, yeah, what we need is a 7-year-old.
I do know it sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, in one sense, the programmes look to me like they're going to be part of the great pantheon of equivalent things like Blackadder and Monty Python. Terry, did you ever think, when you sent off your first sort of Horrible Histories manuscript in the early 1990s, that you'd be sitting in the Royal Albert Hall all these years later, laughing along with actors as they perform such classics as The Plague Song or Divorced, Beheaded, Died?
I think that I could not have seen that far in the future. There wasn't a genre of comedy history around, and we created something completely new. And I used to write books in 2 or 3 book sets, a series, and they lasted a couple of years, then they vanish off the shelves. Horrible Histories has been going 18 or 19 years, and I look back at the books that started to knock me off the top. They've all long gone, and Horrible Histories has got something weird, like Blackadder and like all the classics. And I'm just so thrilled that the television has done the books justice. Mm. It would be ever so disappointing if these books, which have become in a way classics, and I'm not boasting about that, they're read and there are now parents coming to me saying, I passed on my books to my children. And children are writing to me, I love Terrible Tudors, and that was written 10 years before they were born, you know. So they are classics. And it would be so disappointing if these millions of fans were presented with television which doesn't come up to the standard of expectations. Mm. And I'm thrilled with what television's done. And The Proms, another extension.
One of the things that I find fascinating is that in one sense there are going to be generations of children who will be growing up in the next 20, 30 years who've been brought up on a diet of Horrible Histories. And they're going to be setting a challenge for all those adult programme makers for the sorts of history we might see on television. What do you think is the long-term impact, though, of the books and the TV series?
For me, we started developing the series with clips of Monty Python and Do Not Adjust Your Sets and Blackadder, and we said, this is the sort of thing we want to aim for. So if we're considered in the same breath as them now, then I couldn't ask for anything better. I mean, it's really incredible. But for me, I think it's any child that comes up to me and says that they've learned something from the show and it's inspired them to want to go and find out more. That's what I want to do.
Dave?
There's been a few eminent historians who've said, oh, you know, the thing about Horrible Histories is it's a sort of over-populist way of teaching history. And I think they've kind of missed the point completely. And I think the point that Caroline made is that a good teacher is somebody who makes you want to find out more rather than the one who gives you the most facts. And I hope that that's what Horrible Histories does. And I think it does from the experiences that we're all finding of kids who are saying, yeah, I'm really interested in history now, thanks to having watched that programme, and they never would have been before. Recently, I went into my son's class. My son's 8 years old, and I went in and was talking to them about storytelling and how stories have beginnings, middles and ends or whatever. They've got some computers up there, and I said, this is what I do for a living sometimes. I write these songs. And so we showed them the Charles II YouTube, and even before we showed it to them, they said, oh, what? You wrote that? And it was just, I was suddenly sort of transformed from being my kid's dad to being this kind of demigod in front of these 8-year-olds. It was just phenomenal how they just were kind of completely blown away.
We're all called cool at last. It's just about 30 years too late.
The fact that I've got a generation of children going around humming Richard, my little songs for the next 20 years is very nice, thank you very much.
And listening to them in the Royal Albert Hall. Well, Did you ever think that would happen?
Well, you know, I've spent my life really secretly wanting to be a pop star, but to have my three chords played in the Albert Hall in 9 different variations is beyond my wildest dreams. It's fantastic.
It really does seem to me, then, that Horrible Histories are going to create and a very significant legacy, and perhaps a legacy that will change the way people, younger people and older people, think about history. But Caroline Norris, Dave Cohen, Richie Webb and Terry Deary, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Today's 20 Minutes was presented by the historian Professor Justin Champion from Royal Holloway, University of London, and it was produced by Sarah Taylor. Welcome back to the Royal Albert Hall for today's free family prom. Right here on stage, the TV series Horrible Histories has been coming to life before our very eyes, and there's lots more in store for us. Here comes Louise Fryer, but I think she's about to have a shock. I think some of the players are missing down there.
Welcome back. Welcome back to this Horrible Histories prom. Are you enjoying it so far?
Yeah!
Excellent. Well, in the second half, we're going to be meeting some very famous composers, and rumour has it Queen Victoria herself might be putting in an appearance, which is more than can be said for some of the members of the Aurora Orchestra. Rattus, what's going on? We can't have a prom without a full orchestra. Are they still having ice creams?
No, they're playing football in the car park. No, relax, Louise. I'm on top of it for once. The orchestra wanted to make a grand entrance. In fact, that sounds like them now.
So it does. I want to see this. I'm going to go and find a seat.
Thank you.
What are you all doing here, then? Oh, hey, look! Hey, it's only my favourite conductor, Jean-Baptiste Lully. Cooey, Lully! I love you. I do. I really do.
Thank you, I think.
I love the conducting you do with a big stick, too. All this stuff. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Be-dee-dee-dee-dee. I love it. Love it. So much classier than that other fellow with his little twig. Nee-nee-nee-nee-nee-nee. Rubbish. I've got my eye on him.
Do you mind?
Ooh, sorry, maestro. If looks could kill. I'm already dead, mate. I'm already dead. Keep up.
So, which of my musical pieces do you like the most? The one you just heard, perhaps? March pour la cérémonie Turc? Or maybe you prefer my Air de Démon?
Oh, no. Listen, I'm not a big fan of your music, mate. I mean, it's all right and all that, but I am a big fan of your stupid death.
Oh, no.
Come on, organ grinder, that was your cue. Come on. Here we go. Let's get the jingle. Come on, move it, you lot. Come on. Oh, watch it, you. Got my eye on you. Okay, you know how it goes. I'll count you in. Join in if you know the words. Here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4, stupid death, stupid death. They're funny because they're true. Stupid death, stupid death. Hope next time it's not you. Oh. Hey, I borrowed this off a friend of mine. I think it's his funny bone. Funny bone. Well, it made me laugh. Right. Let's get on with this stupid death. Come on then, Monsieur Lully, fire away. What's your story?
Well, I was the official composer to none other than the French King Louis XIV. Between 1672 and 1686, I wrote no less than 20 operas, so...
No. Well done, top of the class, swotty trousers. Now, the stupid death, if you don't mind.
Well, in 1687, to celebrate Louis XIV's recent recovery from a terrible illness, I was conducting a Te Deum.
A tedium? What's that? A spectacularly boring piece of music?
No. It's a Te Deum. It's a Latin. It means a hymn of praise.
Yeah, I know. I was being amusing. Oh, sorry, you're French. You wouldn't understand.
Do you want to hear the stupid death or not, mate?
Yeah. Duh. Obv.
Right. Well, I was beating time for the orchestra using my big staff, which I bang against the floor. You might have noticed me doing it on the way in with the...
Yes, maestro. You see, they hadn't invented tiddly little batons like yours in Lully's day, so they had to conduct using a proper big stick. Bee, 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 bee. See? Much better. Watch him. You'll learn something from him. Carry on.
So, yes, I was beating time for the music, like so. Boom, 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 boom. You get the idea.
Yeah.
When I was a little bit careless, and with one unfortunate stroke, I missed the floor and struck instead my own toe. Ah, not again!
That sounds almost as painful as it is funny.
Yes, well, the wound became infected, creating an abscess.
Ooh, I like where this is going.
And the abscess then developed gangrene.
Yes.
And I died.
Oh, hey. You came to a sticky end. Do you get it because of this? She gets it. Hey, maestro, don't let him near one of your little batons. He'll probably have his eye out.
Come on!
Priceless. Oh, come on then, Lully. Let's get you backstage. I want to take a look at this gangrenous toe. Exit music, please. Stupid deaths, stupid deaths. They're funny because they're true. Stupid deaths, stupid deaths. Hope next time it's not you.
Hello, guten Tag. Guten Tag, I'm Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, the greatest composer that has ever lived. I played to your King George III of England when I was just 8 years old. Can you imagine how cute?
Hello.
Excuse me, I'm talking, please. Now, where was I? I'm Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, the greatest composer that has ever lived. At the age of 11, I composed the opera Bastien at Bastien. Yes, what do you want?
Excuse me, what time does the concert start?
What?
What?
The concert's already started. We're over halfway through.
What?
I said it's already started.
What?
We're over halfway through!
Why are you whispering?
Right. You stay there. Excuse me, may I borrow this? Thank you so much. It's already started! Now, where was I? I'm Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, the greatest composer that has ever lived.
It has already started?
Yes!
Okay, you need to relax. You need to chill off, buddy, huh?
Okay.
Ooh. My name is Ludwig van Beethoven. I am the greatest composer that ever lived.
Well, this is awkward. I'm Mozart. I was greater than you.
I don't think so, Wolfie. My third symphony revolutionized music. My ninth symphony was the first to involve a singers and orchestra. And you might recognize my most famous piece of music, my fifth symphony. It goes something like this. Fa, 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 fa. You recognize that? So you stick that in your schnitzel.
Oh, yeah? Well, I composed over 600 pieces of music. Operas, duets, trios, quartets, quintets, concertos and symphonies, and all before I was 36. So you beat that, girlfriend.
I composed half my music when I was deaf.
Shall we call it a draw?
Okie dokie.
Come on, let's find you a hairbrush. I was so the greatest.
What?
Nothing, nothing. It was me. It was me.
It's absolutely true. Brilliant Beethoven got deafer and deafer as he got older. In fact, after the first performance of his Ninth Symphony, Beethoven didn't have a clue the audience were applauding until someone turned him round to face them. I thought I was going deaf once when I was living down in the sewer. Turned out I just had some poo in my ears. Well, anyway, marvellous Mozart composed this next piece when he was 30 years old. It caused quite a scandal at the time because it made servants look much cleverer and more likeable than their aristocratic masters. It's the overture to the opera Marriage of Figaro.
Thank you.
It's time for my solo. Do you have any idea how long I've been waiting back there?
No, sorry, I don't, actually.
Well, ages! That's how long. Almost as long as I had to wait for my dad to die so I could become king.
Wasn't that nearly 60 years?
Well, it certainly felt that long back there, Nicholas. You remind me of someone, you know. The Duke of Chandos. Yes. I mean, not physically. He had nicer clothes and a far better wig. But he had his own orchestra like yours, except his was in his house. Yes. A full 27-piece orchestra in his house to play whatever he liked whenever he wanted. Even had his own composer, a chap called Handel. Heard of him?
Yes, I have, yes.
Whatever, mate. You met him?
No.
I have. Play something of his, if you please. He's a nice fella, Handel. He's a good bloke. Wrote some beautiful music. Yeah. This one in particular reminds me of my wife. awful woman. No, seriously, Queen Caroline, she looked like an open tin of tuna. She didn't deserve me. For I am worth two of any man. Just ask my weighing scales. Yeah, all right, it's not that funny. So why did I marry her, you ask, when a stunning show pony like me could have any woman he wanted? Well, as per usual, it was my dad's fault. Let me explain. I'm George the Fourth, the Regent King, which means I was just standing in, acting king because my dad, George the Third, had gone barking mad.
Bananas!
Great palaces I did design. Buckingham was one of mine. Art and fashion I so rated.
And wives?
That's more complicated. Actresses and duchesses, the great loves of my life. I loved more girls and I ate pies, but I couldn't stand my wife.
He couldn't stand his wife.
Will you just go away? I only married Queen Caroline when my debts began to climb. 'Cause if I agreed to tie the knot,
I said I'd pay off the lot.
Didn't I? Yes, I did. Yes, I did. But the wedding caused all sorts of strife, 'cause I already had a wife.
A divorced Catholic.
Dad did sigh, but the mad old goat just wouldn't die.
Still here.
Oh, spoke too soon. At last, a good solo array. As true king, my reign began. Though I was now older than your nan. And as the ruler of our nation, I banned my wife from my coronation. And knowing now that I did hate her, she promptly died just 3 weeks later. But all those pies that I got through meant 10 years later I died too.
Hello, have we met? I'm a kangaroo.
Oh no! Actresses, duchesses, the great loves of my life. I love more girls and I ate pies, but I couldn't stand my wife. I had just 10 years on the throne, do you remember that? No, all that you remember is... I was really fat.
He was really fat.
Pop off, Dad, will you? Don't applaud him. He's an embarrassment, that's what he is. So embarrassing, honestly. So, how do you intend to follow a performance like that? Foul rodent.
Well, let's see. We've done medieval music from the Middle Ages.
No, no.
Renaissance music from Tudor times.
Yeah.
Baroque music from when you Georgians were around.
No, no, no.
So I reckon it's time for romantic music. Appropriate, wouldn't you say, for following one of history's great romantics?
Flattery will get you everywhere.
This is one of history's great composers of romantic music. It is Felix Mendelssohn.
Oh, I might stick around and listen to this then.
And probably his best known piece of music, The Wedding March.
The Wedding March? Mm. Weddings remind me of my wife. Have you not listened to a word I've just said? I am so out of here, people. Farewell!
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 Over to you, Mr. Collin.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, rats and rattesses, there's one person we need to thank personally for today. She's responsible for the amazing building we find ourselves in. Yes, this hall, the Royal Albert Hall, was built to honour her late husband, Prince Albert. Please welcome Queen Victoria! Hang on. You're not Queen Victoria. You're Cleopatra, Queen of all Egypt.
Yeah. Well, Victoria has locked herself in the toilets. She was crying over losing her husband, Albert. It was the wedding march that set her off. Honestly, she loses one husband and she's still moping 40 years later. It's pathetic. You know, three of my husbands had been murdered by the time I was 25, and you don't see me crying about it.
Don't you normally arrive by carpet?
Yeah, I did that once when I was smuggled into Julius Caesar's palace rolled up in a rug, but I'm never doing that again. Do you have any idea how long it takes me to look this good? Can you imagine what my hair looked like after I'd been rolled out of a rug? It was a total mess. I had to wash it and wee three times before it looked good again.
Did you say wee?
Yeah, that's how we cleaned our hair in ancient Egypt.
What a coincidence! Wee's my favourite shampoo too. You know, you and me, we've got a lot in common.
I don't think so somehow. Do you know what? Take that back or I will have you fed to the crocs.
Wow. People sure don't last long around you, do they?
No, too right they don't. Right, are we ready for some modern music? Yeah? Famous beauty coming at ya. Guys all go gaga for me, oh. I am a leader and a lady and a queen. I'm Cleopatra, such a queen never been seen. I am a pharaoh, yet they're all meant to be guys. But I don't care, oh, I just wear, oh, be a disguise. My mom and dad were pharaohs, I thought my rules due. But both my older sisters thought that they should rule too. Oh dear, they both died, I wonder who that will leave. Little me, oh, pharaoh Cleo, okay, no time to grieve. Think that's alarming, you'd be right, but it gets worse. Married my half-brother and we rule the universe. That bad romance led to an overcrowded throne. But then he died, boo-hoo, so now I rule alone. Wow, 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 wow. My list of vices bathed in ashes, milk and spices. Then I dress like goddess Isis. Long black hair and ringlets nice as vipers. Two for men in tices. Finest linen robe top prices. Married another brother, he's an okay geezer. But never told of my love for Julius Caesar. Had Caesar's child and hoped that he'd be crowned king. My bro said no, I said oh, and I murdered him. Cause I am Cleopatra, Egypt's royalty. The ruling pharaoh, don't you dare or mess with me. My poker face smiles only when I see a man who takes my fancy like, oh, Mark Antony. Whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa, 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 la, la. No Egyptian crowd pleaser. Finally, I've met my matcher. Ends in death for him and me. Oh, my life was a drama. I was one kooky mama. Whoa, 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 you know. Today, I'd be a favorite of the paparazzo. No pictures, no pictures.
That's right! Cleopatra used to wear a fake beard. Nice! But then, I think everyone looks better with a hairy face. If you're listening on Radio 3, I can only remind you once again that I am a rat. You know, one of my favourite historical facts is that whilst Cleopatra's lot were busy building vast pyramids and palaces in Egypt, people in Britain were building Stonehenge. Yes, ancient Egypt came at exactly the same time as the tail end of the Stone Age, which actually consisted of lots of different eras. I'll let my hairy friend over there explain in another modern style of song. Jazz!
I'm sure you've heard the Stone Age occurred for 2.5 million years. But there's more of Stone Age to engage than maybe it first appears. Hit. Dinosaurs, Neanderthals, let's make this clearer. Didn't live together, came from different eras. That's not all I can tell you, so much more to be known about the many phases of the ages of stone. Shooby dooby doo wop, it's all the rage. To skiddly bop doo wah, brush up on your Stone Age. Oh yeah, alright. It's fine to define an era Paleolithic, but you're gonna have to be a little more specific. You mean lower, when ancient beings first used tools. Oh, middle Paleolithic, when Neanderthal rules. That's when Homo sapiens starts to emerge. But just in Africa, it's long before the global surge. Not till Upper Paleolithic, 40,000 years ago, did Neanderthal and Homo sapiens say hello. Neanderthal and Homo sapiens are living in a caveman harmony. Language was invented, cave painting art. Then Paleolithic ended, which meant to start a phase. Tooby dooby doo wop and turn a new page. Skiddly bop doo wop, mug up on your Stone Age. Oh yeah, alright. This is where it starts to get all scientific. Paleolithic's followed by the era Mesolithic. Then Neanderthals are wiped out by the Ice Age horrific. After which the Neolithic age was terrific. Man learned to farm, build homes so they could settle. Then some other folks turned up and they discovered metal. Beaker men from Europe have outcrossed and outgrown simple and traditional ways of stone. Bronze Age was invented, by now man was flying. Cause hard on its heels came the Age of Iron. Celts, Druids, religion then Rome. By now it is the memory those ages of stone. Shooby dooby doo wop, since that metallic stage. Skiddly bop doo wah, there was no more Stone Age. Shooby dooby doo wop, now you know what is known about the many phases of the ages of stone. Yeah! All right!
Cooey! Guess who? Guess who? Guess who? Who is it? Who is it? Who is it? Who is it? It's me, Death! Keep up! Come on, keep up! Oh, all right, Maestro, how's it going?
Oh, very well, thanks.
Any conductors died in any stupid way since I've been gone?
Don't think so.
Oh, no. Shame. I'm only kidding, really. I'm joshing with you. I'm messing with you, Maestro. Oh, listen, I felt I was a bit harsh on you. Mm. Earlier, so to make sure there's no hard feelings, I brought you a little prezi. Ah. Yeah, it's Jean-Baptiste Lully's gangrenous toe.
Thank you.
No, no need to thank me. You're welcome. It's totally fine. Totally fine. I kill me, I do. I really do. Now, listen, Maestro, where's your flute players?
Right over there.
Flute players. Ah, there we are. Because I want to try something, because, you know, one of my favourite musical instruments comes from the Stone Age, you know. It does. It really does. Let's have a look at your... May I have a look at your flute, please? Yeah, see, it's a bit blingy, isn't it? It's a bit ooh in your face. It's a bit booyakasha, isn't it? How long have you had this flute? 6 months, yeah. I've had this flute 43,000 years. Yeah, it's a Stone Age flute made from hollowed-out leg bone. Woo! Let's compare them, shall we? Give us a little blast on your flute there. Yeah, but you're all right, that'll do. No need to show off. Just because your mates are here. Now try this Stone Age flute. Yeah? Sorry, keep it on. Bit embarrassing, isn't it? So a Neanderthal from 40,000 BC can play that, but you can't, eh? Not so big in front of your mates now, are you? I'll leave that with you to practice with. Keep up the hard work. You might even get on radio with a bit of luck. Now, we've been on a wonderful journey today, haven't we? Through the history of music. You know, from the Middle Ages to modern music, via a little trip back to the Stone Age. So I thought, what better way to end the show than with the most horrible piece of music ever? That's right, it's Jedward. I'm joking, I'm pulling your legs off. No. They came a close second. No, I'm talking about a piece of music by Russian composer Igor Stravinsky. It's called The Rite of Spring. And when it was first performed in 1913, it was considered so outrageous that the audience rioted. Woo! Well, I hope that doesn't happen today. I do hope that happens. I love a good riot. It's about a dancer who danced herself to death. Sounds like a job for me. Thank you.
have this prom to bring you breaking news that Vikings have invaded the Royal Albert Hall.
Ooh, did someone say an invasion? Ooh, I love a good invasion.
No. This is not good. The Vikings are invading. They're nearly here.
Ooh, I can't wait.
For your own safety, ladies and gentlemen, please keep your heads down to avoid any flying axes.
Oh, don't be such a spoilsport. Hey, maestro, play them something they can invade by. How about Wagner's The Ride of the Valkyries?
Are there any monks in the crowd?
Not for long! All right!
I'll kill you. Let's do this thing. Was the summer of 793 when we sailed across the great North Sea.
Comets crossed the skies that night. You must have known something wasn't right.
You arrived upon your English shore and you offered friendship, but we wanted more. Yes, much more. We're tearing up this place tonight.
Literally!
We're gonna set this sleepy town alight.
Literally!
But we'll kill and steal and burn and drink, cause us Viking don't care what you think. Primed and ready to attack.
And we love how monks just don't fight back.
You'll die or become a slave to me.
So our slaves ought to get jumped in the sea. Yeah. If the boats have me, yeah, yeah.
You're gonna lose your head, my friend.
Literally.
We're gonna get you in the end.
Literally.
Drink a toast.
from your skull, because we're Vikings, and that's how we roll. Play that axe, Ragnar.
But in a good way. And now it's time to say goodbye in true horrible history style.
Lots of people we need to thank for that. First of all, let's thank the Horrible Histories crew and their fabulous dancers.
And give it up for the choirs from the Music Centre and the Kids Company Choir.
Let's thank the wonderful Aurora Orchestra.
Our conductor for the evening, Mr. Nicholas Collins.
And our signer, Paul Whittaker. And your host, Rattus Rattus.
Of course, the lovely Louise Fryer.
And you, a wonderful audience. Thank you and goodbye.
And goodbye to Rattus and Louise. As the applause continues here at the Royal Albert Hall, I'll say goodbye too and hand you on now to David Cornett in Broadcasting House.
Well, too many presenters to name there at the Royal Albert Hall, but we can name our own Sarah Walker, and I hope she was dancing and singing with the rest of them.
The Proms is, as we know, the world's greatest festival of music, stretching from now to September like a note that's held and held and held. And I reckon the Proms Poetry Competition is one of the world's greatest poetry competitions, stretching your imagination from now to the closing date of August the 6th. What we'd like you to do is write a poem, in any style, on a piece of music that's performed at this year's Proms. You can react to the music in all sorts of ways. It could evoke a memory. It could make you feel something abstract and profound. or you could pen a sonnet on the way the conductor moves on the podium in the same way your Auntie Mabel moved as she hung out her washing. There are three age groups, 7 to 11, 11 to 18, and 18 upwards. I'm the judge, along with the former Children's Laureate Michael Rosen, and I can't wait to read your entries.
And you can read more about the competition on the Radio 3 website. Well, this is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. We're running a little bit late. It's 16 minutes past one. And high time for the news from Ian Skelly.
The head of Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs has admitted their service simply wasn't good enough last year. Mike Clasper was responding to a report by a committee of MPs who said the tax office didn't answer phone calls or respond to letters quickly enough. He said morale was at rock bottom, but he said things were improving. Libyan rebels have said their military commander was killed by an Islamic-linked militia. General Yunus was shot inside rebel territory earlier this week, but it's been unclear by whom. Colonel Gaddafi's regime said the killing proved the opposition were not capable of running the country. American troops serving in Afghanistan have been warned that they may not get paid if their country's debt crisis isn't resolved. US politicians have until Tuesday to increase the country's debt ceiling. During a tour of Afghanistan, Admiral Mike Mullen was asked by soldiers if their wages were guaranteed, but he said he couldn't honestly answer the question. The US government agency that deals with reconstruction in Iraq says the country is more dangerous now than a year ago. A report said the killing of US soldiers and the assassination of senior Iraqi figures had recently increased. 15 American soldiers were killed in Iraq last month. The Metropolitan Police has said they're investigating alleged computer hacking by newspapers as well as phone hacking. The operation began in response to claims made by the BBC's Panorama programme in March. A British tourist has died after falling from a third-floor balcony in Ibiza. The incident happened yesterday. The Foreign Office said they're helping the man's family. And in just under 2 hours' time, the wedding of the Queen's granddaughter, Zara Phillips, will begin in Edinburgh. Miss Phillips, the daughter of Princess Anne, is marrying the England rugby player Mike Tindall. The ceremony will take place at Canongate Kirk on the Royal Mile. And the weather, a dry afternoon for almost all of the UK with some sunny spells. The highest temperatures will be 21 degrees Celsius across England. And that's the BBC News, the time approaching 20 past one.
And time for today's early music show. Here's Catherine Bott.
400 years ago, France was plunged into a month and a half of mourning. Le bon roi Henri, Henry the Great, the gallant King Henry IV of France, was dead. The day after the king's death, his body was eviscerated, his entrails sent to the Basilica of Saint-Denis, and his heart placed in a heart-shaped silver casket for transportation to the College of Jesuits at La Flèche, a journey marked by solemn ceremonies in every town and city on the way. The royal corpse was then embalmed and lay in state in the Louvre Palace until the end of June, when it was transported from the Louvre to Notre-Dame in sombre but magnificent procession. Here's a contemporary account. On Tuesday, the 29th of the month, the streets from the Louvre to the Church of Notre Dame were draped in black on either side, and upon those hangings were set the king's coat of arms and that of the city of Paris, with about an ell between them, and torches blazed on every house front. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the cortege set forth.
Thank you.
Lutenist Lutz Kirchhoff played Courante de la Reine by Robert Ballard, and before that, Pavane pour le Roi from the Philidor manuscript, performed by Douce Mémoire, directed by Denis Raisin d'Adre. Music from the time of Henri IV of France, who died untimely 400 years ago. The day after the king's body was taken to Notre Dame, the cathedral was the backdrop to a mass celebrated in the king's honour. The whole service lasted 5 hours and was followed by a 7-hour procession of the cortège to the Basilica of Saint-Denis, where it arrived at 10 o'clock for further vespers and vigils. Then, on the 1st of July, another funeral ceremony was held at Saint-Denis from 9 a.m. until 2 in the afternoon. Such splendid funeral rites received, as you've already heard, a lavish contemporary account, full of incidental detail about the coffin within a coffin, the cloth of gold draperies and heraldic devices, the ringing of the bells. It also states, helpfully, that the musicians included the members of every royal musical establishment, with shawms, flutes, trumpets, drums and so on, all of them draped in black. The only thing that isn't mentioned is, what music did they play? Material by the composer Eustache du Corroy is likely to have featured heavily in the proceedings. He'd been in the king's service for more than 20 years, first as deputy master of the Chapel Royal, then as composer to the Royal Chamber and superintendent of the king's music. Du Corroy's only surviving mass is his Missa pro Defunctis, written in 1606, which was the most famous requiem mass of its day. French tradition declares that it was this mass that was sung at Henri IV's funeral. More than a century later, in 1724, it was confirmed as the official requiem to be sung at funerals of all kings of France.